Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor,
we have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.
I was at a place where I was really struggling in my own personal life. So I was almost kind of like putting myself through his hero's journey. And in that way, sort of allowed me to, okay, what's my work ethic? What is a way that I can regroup and have a focus and have a goal? What is my version of winning a championship? And this was all happening before I even found acting or got into acting. But in a way, it taught me what empathy and almost kind of like accessing someone else's life means.
I hate this podcast because you're making me appreciate a longtime villain of mine. Fanatics, ooh, everyone's got their thing.
Fanatics. Claire, can you hear it?
Can I hear what?
It's a stadium full of podcast listeners loving our podcast because today we're getting a little athletic. Hi, Claire Kramer.
Hello, David Magadoff. How are you?
I am doing wonderfully. I'm getting pumping up the jams with a little sportsy theme going on for today because we have a wonderful guest.
A little NBA theme.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, we're going to do that later too, so that's a double dose. Guys, we have on Mr. James Kyson today. Yes, you know James from, of course, Heroes.
He played Ando
in the most amazing acclaimed series that we all love and adore. And you have seen him just this last year in Yes Day. And, of course, Lovecraft Country.
And Preacher.
And Preacher.
Also, great, great show.
You are the Michael Jordan aficionado between the two of us.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that, but I do love the man, you know. I mean.
And so does James Kyson.
And so does James.
Michael Jordan videos. All kinds of videos. We're talking like DVD to VHS to YouTube. He just drinks them in. And we're not going to talk about any of the wonderful projects that he's been in because that's not how we do. How we do is how we do.
How Michael do.
How Michael do.
Number 23.
That was the campaign, right?
In this house.
How Michael do. Not be like Mike. How Michael do.
How Michael do. That's it.
I'd say it's a slam dunk.
Well, I won't try to top that. Let's go ahead and listen to the episode. So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. At Fanatics, we love to celebrate what people are passionate about.
Claire and I love people who love people and yes. love things and love ideas and love things.
Exactly. So I am curious, James, tell us, what are you fanatical about?
So I've been fanatical about Michael Jordan since, I want to say, my teenage years. So the first time I saw him play was, he was playing for the Chicago Bulls.
And I love you because I was a huge Bulls fan in this era with Phil Jackson and Steve Kerr and
this
and
is literally
Scottie
the
Pippen
fabric of my childhood. This is what I grew up on. So first time I saw a Bulls game, I think my dad, you know, had it on television, and I don't even know if he was like a basketball fanatic, but he happened to run a sneaker store, like a mom and pop version of Foot Locker, right?
Uh-huh.
So he knew a lot about sneakers, and he always told me, okay, Air Jordans are like considered like the gold standard for sneakers. They're the most expensive. They're the most like in demand, you know. And so he'll point out. So that's Michael Jordan. That's who the shoes are named after. And right now he's the best player in the NBA. And it was my first time seeing him, and he was so athletic, and he was jumping and dunking and like flying. And I'm like, this guy's like Superman, right? And then literally shortly after that is when the Bulls started going to the finals every year. And this was when I was just going into high school. So it was like all over TV, and I was just getting into basketball for the first time, right? And we had moved to Riverdale, New York, because I was going to high school in the Bronx, and we happened to live right in front of a park, right, where there were basketball courts. So, and this was when NBA was on NBC, and I remember like the theme song, right? And the great Marv Albert, right, was like always the commentator, right? Like, here comes Jordan. Yes, and it counts, you know? And so those are just like literally like imprinted in my mind. And so we will watch the games and then go out into the park and just trying to like recreate the moves. And, you know, this is in the 90s, before social media, before like really internet, right? So you either had to watch things live or like had to tape it on VHS.
On VHS,
right?
Tapes, yes.
So that's what we would do. And then we would rewind, replay. And I had a best friend named Charlie in high school. And we would literally try to watch the games together. We would play out in the park and then time it. So like, okay, this is when the pre-show is going on. There's about 3 minutes of like when they're interviewing, talking. And then we would literally like run into my house as like they were tipping off. And then halftime, we'll go out into the park again and try to get like 30 minutes of like, you know, shooting around and then come back. It was like, so this is literally like, that's when the obsession began.
I love it because Michael Jordan is such an amazing athlete. And just yesterday I bought my kid Air Jordans. I mean, mm-hmm. he's so iconic and the longevity has just been there. Was it the fact that you were also participating in the basketball, you know, like trying to replicate the moves, or was it just his pure athleticism that kind of drew you to him?
So I think there was a lot of things going on. I was growing up in New York City, right? We had moved around and
I still don't know how you're not a Knicks fan in all this.
Well, so check it out. Look,
I grew up in Jersey. Like, like Jordan, but how are you not like Patrick Ewing?
Look, I always supported the Knicks because I was a New Yorker.
They were good then too.
And the Bulls and Knicks were like the biggest rivalry.
They were.
Right? So it was like me as a fan, of course I'm supporting the Knicks, but me as a true basketball fan, I'm like, the Bulls are going to win because they're just better, right? But I'm always hoping for a great series. You'll go to game sevens. And look, New York, I have a lot of love for the Big Apple, but just the Knicks just always had, they haven't won a championship since the 70s.
But they were good then.
Well, they were good.
It's so funny that you picked the one period of time, especially as a teenager, where the Knicks were actually okay with John Starks and Oakley.
But they had Patrick Ewing, but they didn't have a Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. No, I get it. If you literally pick the greatest basketball player of all time. So you're forgiven on that, but it's just so funny.
Well, it was also during a time where, okay, so my family lived in South Korea for 10 years, right? And when I was growing up there, and I didn't even remember this, but my mother told me recently that I played Little League in South Korea. So baseball was my first sport, and I loved being part of a team sport. And so I wanted to continue that when we moved. But in New York City, you know, we're an immigrant family, and we were just kind of trying to survive and get our footing. So I didn't get to play any team sports when we were growing up in New York. And, you know, I didn't get to go to baseball camp. I didn't get to join a basketball team. There was really no one around to sort of teach me any new sport. So I remember the high school that I went to, they didn't have a football team, but they had three Ultimate Frisbee teams, okay? And this was first time, like, me even learning what Ultimate Frisbee was. So I tried out, and I kind of, like, got in as, like, a walk-on. But I wasn't good because it just...
A walk-on for the Ultimate Frisbee team?
Yeah. Because it was that competitive. They had three teams, and I think I was almost like in a trial period for like the Division III, like of the three, right? Like there was like the A and the B and like the C, and where it was E, or because I think they even had a girls team, which was awesome. And it was like uber competitive, but it was a new sport. I wasn't very good, but I just remember wanting to be part of a team sport, just really wanting that. And at the time, I didn't really have sort of like an older male figure in my life, you know, like my dad was pretty much absent. I didn't have an older brother. And so I think me wanting to desire being part of like a team dynamic and wanting like a role model male figure. So he was just, he like
He's
really
the best.
Kind of filled in that place for me.
Well, I also feel like Knicks versus Bulls, like the Bulls were a team. Other than their center, what was their center's name? Bill Weddington?
Well, it started with Bill Cartwright and then went to Luke Longley. And then they had like a three, and the, they had
they
a three-headed monster.
They never had a good center, but point is, they had everything else. I mean, the relationship between Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, the relationship between Phil Jackson and those guys, the relationship between Steve Kerr, who was the ultimate like three-point shooter in the league probably ever, that was like... I feel like you're saying like that solidified your love for that team versus the Knicks, which were just kind of like they didn't have that family type feeling.
Yeah, and like I mean,
bunch
they
of
were
thugs.
And look, thugs. Look, when they did come together, they were a very formidable team for those couple of years, and they ended up going to the finals after Jordan retired for the first time. But something about the Bulls, I think even the narrative of it, it was so cinematic. Because Jordan really kind of lived out, he was like a living life hero's journey, like unfolding in front of people's eyes. And even me, this was before like I was in acting or I knew anything about storytelling, like you could just feel his life was, it was so cinematic in nature how he had to like overcome so many different obstacles. He was beat down by the Pistons year after year, 4 years in a row, and then learned how to become from like a great individual player to like how to become a team leader. And then they started going to the finals every year, and he literally beat everybody, like all his peers that he was competing with. He had to, it was almost like a video game. Kind of like a Bruce Lee movie where he had to kind of like go on different levels and beat different bosses. That was like Jordan's life.
It was like Wreck-It Ralph on the basketball court.
Exactly, right? He had to first beat the Pistons. Then he had to go, he had to beat the Cavs. Then he had to go through the Knicks. And then every final series, he had to face like a new super opponent, you know? It's like the Avengers. It's like, it was so movie-like in nature that you couldn't help but follow it. And you're like, you're almost like reimagining your life in his shoes.
I remember him playing one of the final games. I don't know if it was like 95 or, you know, it was one of those, one of the like final playoff games. And he was, you maybe remember this game. He was so sick and he was so dehydrated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, oh, and he had the Gatorade contract at the time. Yeah. And I remember you just looked at him and he just like was, he was a high point winner for that game, I think. He scored in the 30s, you know, 37 points or something. Yeah. And he literally, like, afterwards, they, like, basically had to carry him off. And then they were like, yeah, and Gatorade did the trick. Like, you know, he's just amazing.
Claire, how did you, hold on, Claire, how did you get so into Michael Jordan?
Well, that's not the story here.
I know, but, like, you're, I'm, this is.
I love basketball. I love greatness. Mm-hmm. I love someone who is at the pinnacle of their profession.
You know, and I think that was it. Even though I was a teenager, I think I recognized this combination of someone who was uber talented and really outworked everybody, because I was mostly attracted to his work ethic, you know, and his 6 a.m. workouts. And there were the tri-captains, him, Scottie Pippen, and later Ron Harper. But these guys will get together and work out every day, which is a practice that I've sort of adapted into my life today. I was working out with, you know, other peers and kind of starting the morning that way. And he really, I could see sort of the arc and the trajectory of him really trying to do things by himself, trying to take over and then failing and then learning these lessons of like, I could only win if we work together as a team and everybody's superpowers or gifts are elevated to max, if they're maximized. So then guys like John Paxson and Steve Kerr and these role players who are really good at certain things, I think he was able to get to a place where
he made
like,
them better.
Yeah, exactly. Better. And I'm going to make sure that they're highlighted, you know? So I remember every final series, there was some kind of dramatic narrative that was involved, and he always won in some kind of dramatic fashion.
Oh,
and
absolutely. It was like, I so remember, again, one of these games where at the very end, they had this thing where he passed the ball to Steve Kerr, and again, he like sunk the three-pointer, and they won by one.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And I feel like you're totally right on with everything. It was just so cinematic.
Yeah, and not only that, so the first time he retired at 30, like literally at the peak of his sport, and at the prime of his career, he could have played for, you know, several more seasons. So it was a shock.
Yeah,
now,
were you super bummed?
Well, I was super bummed, and what had happened is Jordan's father was murdered. That tragedy really prompted him to kind of like take a step back, reflect, and then so he retires and then pursues baseball, which is a sport he hasn't played since high school, right? My first love, my first sport. So then he, and I don't know if you guys ever seen the ESPN documentary 30 for 30, but there's one called Jordan Rides the Buzz. And it really shows basically the year and a half between his two playing days, right? Where he literally started over from like a beginner's place. He rides the bus with everybody and literally had to kind of, you know, be the first one to show up at batting practice. And he had to work twice as hard as everybody else who's been playing for 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And when he started, he was considered terrible. You know, he couldn't bat his own weight. And it was super humbling. You know, he had made some errors in the field. And then literally about, you know, 6 months later, 12 months later, he had his first home run. And he started getting better and better. And you saw how fast he caught on to. And even on a minor league level playing baseball, like these guys are like really amazing. You know, they're like collegiate athletes who are now getting paid to play baseball now on a much humbler level than playing in major league baseball.
I'm a huge Mets fan and I'm following Tim Tebow in our you know, organization. And it's wild to see how humbling he's get. But like he's doing, he's on some levels terrible, but it's fascinating to see these people who used to do one sport trying to do another sport and getting very humbled. Yeah.
Exactly. And then now talk about the most famous guy in the world, not just an athlete.
In the world, at the time,
most famous person in the world.
And under criticism for retiring.
Minor league organization.
You know, from basketball. People didn't understand, you
and
know?
And got made fun of. Like Sports Illustrated, which used to champion him, you know, on all these covers, kind of featured him playing baseball and making an error, right? Air Jordan, I think, ERR, like I think that was the cover. So was made fun of, was criticized, but still worked at it. And when baseball went on strike, came back to basketball, right? And then he was rusty. And then fifth game back, who does he play? The Knicks at Madison Square Garden. I remember watching that game live because he was so, like, I had butterflies and I was like almost like nervous for him. And he was, again, playing my, you know, my home team, the New York Knicks. The rivalry is kind of, the tension and dynamic is still there. And he scores 55 points, the most points scored MSG at the time up until that point. So
and everyone else comes to the Garden and scores the most points. No, never is there a Knick team that scores most. The Garden is always for everyone else.
But even the way he came back, you know, the first game back, I think they played Indiana. Like he scored like 18 points or something and then lost his third game. Fourth game, he scores 30 and scores his first game winner again against Atlanta, you know? And almost like you could feel him kind of like warming up to the Knicks game, because you know everybody was going to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was MSG. The Knicks were still good, and it was like...
You got Spike Lee sitting there.
Exactly.
And we finally went to the finals because he was out of the league.
Exactly.
The year before
exactly.
that.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the Bulls would have won probably 8th Street.
Yes.
You know? So, and it comes back. They lose to the Magic in the playoffs, right? And then they pick up Rodman in the offseason. And I remember him saying, like, I threw away the golf clubs and I had to go back to work again, starting from the basics, you know, chop wood, carry water. And then what happens? Next year, it's the greatest NBA season ever, 72-10.
What do you think someone like Michael Jordan, what do you think makes them up as a person differently than you or me? Because in theory, you're right. It's about the work ethic. It's about the leadership ability. It's about the congealing of the players and the team. It's about that he's a natural born leader. But what is it like about someone like him that makes him so, in a way, accessible and in a way, so elite?
Well, here's a narrative that I think a lot of people can relate to, right? He talks about trying out for his high school basketball team and being cut and not making him. So he used that as a motivation.
Yeah, he was. Right? That's the thing. He wasn't like LeBron, where everyone knew in high school he's going to be the biggest thing. He like barely made it to North Carolina.
Yeah, there was.
And then it's like, oh, he won a championship. Guy's pretty great.
There was a trajectory that you saw just even from early on making that game-winning shot at the UNC game, right, when he was a freshman, right, and then coming into the NBA and was considered like this hot shot and almost like leading the league in scoring as a rookie of the year. He gets iced out in his first All-Star game as a rookie because they kind of considered him cocky and whatnot, right? He loses the slam dunk contest, comes back 3 years later, faces Dominique, and he wins it, right? And then now he starts getting all these accolades like All-Star MVP, regular season MVP, scoring titles, but he's losing year after year to the Pistons. And now people are like, well, he's selfish. He can't win. He leads the league in scoring. So and then he puts the team together, and the Bulls started winning year after year, year after year. Retires, loses, gets humble, comes back, and then wins three in a row again in such dramatic fashion. He's the only guy that's ever gone to the final six times and is undefeated. No one's done that. LeBron doesn't have that record. Kobe doesn't have that record. So, and the way he finished his, I mean, his Washington Wizard days is kind of like almost like an afterthought, but the way he finished his career with the Bulls, even that, I remember watching that game
absolutely.
Live, right? 23 points in the first half. It's like, I'm a fan of numerology and even those things, 23 points in the first
number
half.
Number 23,
right?
23
45
points.
45 points for the game, which was his other number that he wore when he first came back, right? And then he makes the game-winning shot, and it's against the Utah Jazz. And I remember when they won the game six of his last NBA championship, it was like when you've watched the greatest movie ever and you kind of have to like process. I literally had to go for like an hour walk because I was so infused. I was so hit with so many emotions of watching this happen that I literally had to, and I had to process for like days. That's how much it hit me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that is, to me, and you know, people can argue the difference between being a fan of science fiction or entertainment and being a fan of sports, and you know, but that to me is art. When someone is so good and so profound at what they do that you are ignited on the inside.
Yeah, and I would even argue that this experience is sort of what it was, kind of my access point into acting, because what I was doing is I was literally living out his life through my own lens in a way. So I wasn't just watching him as like, you know, the way you just kind of enjoy basketball as an entertainment. And then, oh, of course, he's a celebrity, he's an icon. Like for me, what I was doing, I think because I was at a place where I was really struggling in my own personal life. So I was almost kind of like putting myself through his hero's journey. And in that way, sort of allowed me to, okay, what's my work ethic? What is a way that I can regroup and have a focus and have a goal? What is my version of winning a championship? And this was all happening before I even found acting or got into acting. But in a way, it taught me what empathy and almost kind of like accessing someone else's life means.
I hate this podcast because you're making me appreciate a longtime villain of mine. So I hate that this podcast exists even, because now I'm appreciating Michael Jordan. How are you doing this to me, James?
Well,
if we get someone else on with Tom Brady, I'm gonna, as a Jets fan, go crazy. But well, now I'm appreciating someone that I hated my entire life.
That's the beauty of sport.
You're so into him, and it's beautiful,
dude. That's the beauty of sport, right?
I know, we
stand for our teams.
He's great.
Yeah, but you know what? Jordan also had a lot of haters. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know?
I'm one of them.
And I mean, look, same thing happened with Kobe, right? Kobe, when he was playing, was a very polarizing player. I was a fan of Kobe, but there were a lot of conversations that, and there were times during when Kobe was playing that I'm like, man, Kobe is selfish. That's not how you win basketball games. But after you found out a lot more about his personal life and what he was doing after basketball career, a lot more became fans, you know?
Oh, with the Mamba Academy and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really amazing. And obviously, you know, the city is still reeling from his recent death, mm-hmm. but it has been a chance to educate, I feel like, about what he stood for in the second half of his life and career.
Yeah.
You know, after the court. 2 years.
I think this is what's interesting about athletes and team sports just in our zeitgeist in general is that, and I think this is a century-long human evolution thing where we like to be part of a tribe. We like to stand for something. And there's always been this notion of healthy competition. One time I think I looked at the origin of the word competition, and they said when it actually began, it was an idea of people competing or opposing each other or providing an oppositional force to elevate your craft. Mm-hmm. So really the big picture, the intent behind competition and sports and the Olympics was so that we can become better at things by providing a resistance to one another. So it was like a collaborative intent of I'm going to make you better, you're going to make me better, and we're going to kind of provide some tension and opposition and obstacles to each other so that we can kind of like elevate together. And I think it touches upon a very primal essence in our core. And I think this is why people get so passionate about sports. And there's obviously different levels of fandom, right? And like sometimes you go and you're in the arena and you're just like screaming your face out for your team, but you don't even know really why you're so like obsessed or involved in it.
Did you watch the Michael Jordan tribute to Kobe during his celebration? Yeah. That was beautiful. And just talking about he would text and call him. Michael always made a joke. He's like, he's so annoying. But he would call and text like at 2 a.m., at 3 a.m., like saying, hey, my girl, she's 12. You know, how can I learn from you? And what can we, you know, give her? And he's like, I was playing baseball at 12. But he was just crying throughout that. He loved Kobe's needling and his sense of drive.
That was super touching. And I got to say, so I did end up having a personal experience with Michael. So
you got to meet him?
Yeah, so I got to meet him.
Oh.
And this was, I want to say, so 2008, this was during second season of Heroes. The writer's strike happened, right? And then
you turned to baseball.
Yeah. So, and I just remember at the time I had one film that I was going to go film in Lake Tahoe, but you know, because the writer's strike happened, all of a sudden our schedule was open. My schedule was open. And then I get a call from my publicist at the time and she's like, do you play golf? I was like, I mean, I have a set of golf clubs. I think I've been to the driving range once. It's like, well, they would love to invite you to play in the Jordan Classic. And Jordan Classic is a charity golf tournament that Michael hosted every year. It was televised on ESPN and literally like the who's who of athletes and celebrities playing this thing.
Oh,
and a lot
my
of people
gosh.
Are great. So literally I'm frozen, right? I almost dropped the phone and I said, I will learn golf.
Yeah.
Right? But literally it was like happening like a week later, you know? So what I've been told was that he was a fan of the show. So that's why I was like, how does he even know who I am?
Right.
You know, so that's how I got invited. So I have this surreal experience and I wasn't even going to like literally first time flying on a private jet. And like, there was like all these black celebrities on the plane, like people that I grew up watching. And I'm like, I'm just like pinching myself. I'm like, I don't even know how I'm here. And it was in the Bahamas, okay?
Oh my gosh.
What is that famous resort in the Bahamas?
The Atlantis?
The Atlantis. They were hosting it at the Atlantis.
The giant pink hotel?
Yes. So you literally get to stay there for like a week or a week and a half.
You flew in a private jet with these amazing celebrities.
And the girl that I was dating at the time, because I got to bring a plus one. So she's like, oh my God, Bahamas? Yes. So she comes with me and like we check in and they gave all of us like these suites. I can't even tell you like the money that it must have gone in to just host these guests. And I don't even play golf. Okay. So it was like one of those like fantastical experiences that you're like, I can't even believe this is happening. You check into your suite and you're literally like facing like the ocean. The suite was probably as big as my condo, I think, you know what I mean? And so they have all these different events planned, you know, like there's a schedule, like there's like a charity brunch, and then, oh, there's a dinner for everybody where Michael and
it's like the best week of summer camp ever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this was
with
like
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, this was
that
like
you're gonna
in
meet.
January, but like in the Bahamas, it's tropical weather. And I just remember the gala dinner, like one of the first nights that you arrive, you check in, you settle in and you come down. And I was sitting next to another athlete, you know. Now, I didn't recognize him. So I was like, hey, what are you doing? What do you play? I believe his name was Jimmy Rollins. And he said, I play for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
shortstop.
My dad, he lives and works in Philly for the past 25, 30 years. You know, so I've spent a lot of time in Philly helping him out. So I was like, oh, my God. I was there in Philly when the Phillies went to the World Series, played the Jays. They lost. But, you know, it was like a really, you know, like very exciting time in Philadelphia. And so we started talking and yada. Later, I found out he wins MVP of that baseball season. I didn't even know who I was sitting next to, right?
Unbelievable.
Right? Him and his wife. So even working in Hollywood, I've never been sort of starstruck by quote-unquote other movie stars and whatnot because I think, I don't know, because this is also my profession, they always felt like peers rather than celebrities.
Right.
But athletes are people that I grew up watching and idolizing, right? So I literally see people, like I see Ken Griffey, I see Derek Jeter, wow. I see Dr. J, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm just like...
You're like, what is going on here?
My mind is blown. And I remember my girlfriend at the time said this to me. She said, we were in mid-conversation and I literally just stopped. And she says she's never seen this happen to me. We've been like to the Golden Globes party or whatever. And I just stopped in mid-sentence because I saw Michael walk down. Him and his now wife, but his girlfriend at the time. Literally, like, he's where David is, like 4 feet in front of me. And he's looking around. He says, you know, where do you want to sit, baby? You know, he's talking to his girlfriend. And then they end up going to where Dr. J is sitting. You know, I think he did with his wife. So he joins that table. And I was like, Lisa, my girlfriend at the time, I was like, I got to go say hello to him and say thank you. You know what I mean? So I muster up the courage. And this was literally like, I don't even remember how I did this. But like, you have to understand, you know, going back to this fanaticism, I've literally had and watched every single video that he was ever in. Right. So it started with flashing back to, you know, my high school days, right? Me and my best friend, Charlie, Come Fly With Me. Come Fly With Me, the Sports Illustrated edition. Michael Jordan's Playground. Michael Jordan's Airtime or Hang Time, whatever it was called. And then later, Michael Jordan to the Max. And then NBA Superstars 1 and 2. Literally every NBA video that he was in, we like put our collections together and we would watch literally every day.
This isn't YouTube. These are just VHS tapes.
VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And not only that, my buddy Charlie was so good at anytime games were on, he like recorded them like manually or timed it. You know, he had like a fancier VCR where you could kind of schedule in tapes. I didn't even have that. So he would literally bring them over. And this was like a daily ritual. We would watch music videos set to like his highlights. And so meeting someone that you've literally watched almost every day of your life.
Right.
And then him for the person now. And so I go up to him, you know, my girl's with me. I said, hey, Michael, my name is James. You know, I'm an actor on Heroes. And I just wanted to say thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here. And thank you so much for hosting us, for your generosity. And he was so gracious, you know. And I was like, this is my girlfriend, Lisa. And he's like, oh, this is my girlfriend, you know, so and so. You know, how you doing, love? And just like, and we just talked for a bit. He's like, you're going to play? And I was like, man, I don't play like you. I think I'm just going to hit the driving range and see if I could even like put together, you know, some sort of tools. Anyway, so I was like this. I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't know what to say, but I was
like,
just
like, you're having an out of body experience.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm trying to be as articulate and just together as much as possible. And I keep it short and I say, thank you. And then I go back to my table and it doesn't even feel real for me.
No.
You know, that was the only and the last time I got to meet Michael in person. But I could tell that his generosity and authenticity is real, you know? And he grew up in North Carolina. My wife is from Michigan. There's something about the Midwest. You know, you grow up in that family setting. You know, these people are sort of like the salt of the earth. You grow up learning certain etiquettes and how you relate to people. And I feel like really Michael really had that.
Oh, absolutely. And you can't mask something different and project that for decades without it being uncovered, you know? So he is the real deal. The real deal, for sure.
Yeah. And look, that's not to say that he's not imperfect, right? Like, even throughout his career days, I know that he was a great trash talker. Michael would use, anytime someone says something about him, he would kind of like, I think the story is he would cut out the article, put it on his locker, and use it as motivation, right? And he's had these moments where it didn't always necessarily rub people the right way. I mean, you're a perfect example, right? You grew up hating him because, you know, he was the rival of the Knicks.
He was the enemy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Public enemy number
one.
Yeah.
So, but what I loved about his journey is that he has been very human, and it's really hard to live that out front of the world. And he's really been able to do that. Now, of course, he also had to be incredibly private. I've, you know, heard interviews where sometimes it was really hard to be him. You know, you go and play in different cities and traveling around the world and you can't really leave your hotel room, right? And feeling isolated because you're so famous that you know what I mean? So, but all of that to me felt so human. And these are aspects that I feel like I relate to and have experienced in my own degree. And I think that's why so many people can relate to him from different, you know, levels of life.
Were you scared to talk to him? Because I know I've had moments to meet heroes, and I have to ask myself, maybe I shouldn't go up to them because I don't want the whole bubble to burst, because you do have this even though you know everything about him, there it's still based a little bit, right, when about your hero in fantasy, just a little bit, because you don't know them personally.
Yeah.
It's still the interviews they've had, the documentaries and stuff. So is there just a moment, or was it just, no, I'm you were just so thankful.
Yeah,
that
I remember, because I'm trying to recollect
to
that night. And
you're there.
I don't think I was necessarily scared per se, but I did have to kind of like have a courage to be like, you know what? I am going to have, even if it's short, a personal experience with him, just because he's given me so much in terms of just entertainment, posters, moments, a lot of connection to my own life. That
it's important for you to say thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially being there and like the context of the circumstance,
yeah, like,
you know,
literally, like, thank you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I would say that was like an easily a $10,000 trip that he gifted to every single participant that was there. What, there was at least 50 of us, right? Some people didn't even play in the golf tournament. They were just there to like literally enjoy Bahamas, you know? And so I had to say thanks. It's weird because I don't even normally, like, sometimes, you know, you fly on the plane and there's an actor there that you may admire. But for me, I'm not the one that feels like necessarily I have to go up to them and say, I may even just appreciate them from afar, because I really respect people's kind of privacy, right? Or if they're just kind of in life, I like respecting people's space, and not everybody just wants to be approached all the time. Even if it's to say, hey, I loved you on this show and I appreciate your work. Now, that may be my own thing, because I know when people do that to me, I always appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I always feel, oh my God, thank you so much for saying hello and saying that to me. But I think sometimes I've had my own resistance of like, oh, I don't want to bother that person. Or, you know what I mean? But that moment with him, I felt invited by life to go and connect with him.
I love that so much. Okay, so let me ask you this. you know that scene, and it's a great scene with Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire, where he's, I think it's Jerry Maguire, where he's playing the radio and he's trying to find that right song, and he's like, which song is he gonna sing along to, and which song is gonna amp him up?
And then he finds Falling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you need to amp yourself up, James, either for like an event or a big audition or whatever, do you put on Michael Jordan videos and watch them?
Yeah, so it's crazy. You know how people, you know, listen to, and look, growing up in New York, hip hop was my first love. So hip hop does have that effect on me if it's the right song or the right artist. But more so, what actually always amps me up the best is basketball highlights. And this continues until today, right? So I'm a huge NBA fan, right? So I'm always kind of, and it's not like I don't really sit down and watch games during the regular season, but now because we have the internet and YouTube, they kind of put together these highlights for you every game. So every big game, you know, now
living in LA. You'll catch a whole game in 3 minutes now.
Exactly, yeah. So now living in LA, you know, and following the Lakers and the Clippers, you could watch these highlight clips of the entire games, right? And then they have plays of the week and best plays of the month and all that stuff. And then once the playoffs come and then the finals, now I got to watch the finals depending on who's playing, right? So, but literally, the way that I used to unwind, you know, after like long day on set, or just like, you know, you come home and like everybody's gone to bed and it's like, you know, 10:30, 11 p.m., I start watching NBA highlight clips. And you would amp me up so bad that I'm literally now starting to do moves in my own living room. I can't tell you how many times, literally watching a highlight, my body would move without even my consciousness, and I'll bang into the ceiling or like bang into some kind of coffee table, and I'm like literally writhing on the floor by myself at like 12:30 in the morning. I'm such a jackass.
But dude, there is nothing better than having that feeling of like adrenaline and amped up, whatever. That's a combination of like joy and adrenaline and like,
yeah.
Being like, you know, in it. And like, I can totally see how that would work with I'm going to try basketball videos.
Yeah. What I've had to learn is that I can't do that before going to bed, because now it's going to take me another hour to just even like
to calm
to
down.
Settle down. Right. So like, yeah, do it like during the day.
Like 20 milligrams of melatonin with every basketball video.
Yeah, exactly.
Video.
You know, do it when I get up before workout. Well, whatever. But
is it a dunk? Is it a 3-point shot? Like, because there's a lot of different highlights that I enjoy, you know, like, do you like a good half court? Like, oh my gosh, like, what is it? Or is it just like a great slam?
I love all of it. What I love is sequences that leads to a dunk or like a game winning shot. And I think this, again,
the choreography to get to that, the ball of the hoop. Yeah.
I think this is coming back to, again, the team dynamic, right? Like for me, so I didn't actually
a good assist. You like a good assist.
Yeah. And I didn't get good at basketball. So, you know, in high school, I started going out to that park and was just kind of, but I was like self-teaching at that point. So it wasn't until in my 20s where I actually got pretty good. And there were several years where I did play on a local level competitively. I play for a club team for YMCA, and I'll go to these pickup games in LA. And, you know, the competition level was pretty legit. And I played on a couple of USO tours where we played on a basketball team and we got to travel around the world, Italy and Hawaii, and play the official teams from the Army, Navy, the Marine Corps, Air Force. And one team we played were like the European champs. They were like super legit. Oh, so they were like just like literally like cream us, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but it was all for charity and it was good fun. Again, it comes back to like the team dynamic. When I see sequences, and I love playing point guard because I love passing the ball, that like I love an assist.
Feeding, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what really attracts me about basketball, even more so than basketball and football. When you watch it, it's this unique team sport where there's both collaboration and individual artistry and expression.
I find that with soccer, too, to be true.
Yes, yes. So
the beautiful game.
Yeah, and the pacing of the game. It really is a beautiful game, and I think it's the part of me that really loves being part of a team and longs to be a part of a team, which is also, I think, why I went into acting, you know, is because when you're on set for that, whether it's a week or month or 5 years, you're part of that team and everybody's bringing a different set of skill, whether you're special effects or props or visual art department, you know, where the writers, there's the coaches and the assistant coaches, and there's the guy who's really good at post-up. There's a guy or gal that's really good at coming in and just scoring off the bench. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And this is why, you know, like even every superhero movie, you know, the Justice League, the Avengers, like when you see people with different gifts come together and then together they're able to either achieve something or create something by the alchemy of those gifts. I think that's what attracts me the most in life.
I totally agree. I love that. Okay, so before we wrap it up, I've been thinking about this and now I'm gonna put a scenario out to you. You can warp time so that you don't have to work in those constraints of people's actual age and lives. Michael Jordan, who are the four that he's gonna play with that are gonna create like the pinnacle team ever?
Yeah, the greatest of all time.
And I'm gonna just project and say Phil Jackson's the coach because I think he's the best coach ever.
Yeah, 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 I would say. And you gotta put Steve Kerr in there, maybe as the assistant coach,
him.
You know? with MJ, I would say Magic. I would say it used to be Scottie Pippen, but I think LeBron. You know, now he's sort of become the Uber.
Oh, you gotta put him on the top five.
Yeah, exactly. You know, LeBron. Time. It's a power forward. Ooh, that's a really tricky one, you know?
Tim Duncan?
Tim is up there. Karl Malone is up there. Larry Bird.
I love Larry.
Right?
The Celtics, there was no better team in
Because
that was before the Bulls or the Knicks were really coming into their own.
Yeah, and I'm really trying to take people within that era because obviously if Larry played today, right, like the athleticism gap would be like really a lot.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Exactly. Like playing in that era and really being able to utilize different skills to become such an elite player and an MVP. And then as the center, you know, I mean, listen, you got Wilt and Kareem, but I would have to put Russell just because he really embodied the team spirit and this idea of, and he really played defense and focused on rebounding. You really have to have that element in your team. You can't have five MVPs all scoring leaders.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So I think as a team, if that starting five is going to go all the way, you got to have someone like Bill Russell in there in the middle.
That's a great five. I love it.
So if you had to tell Claire and I and anyone listening the video that we have to start with for MJ.
Whether
it could be a clip, it could be Space Jam, one video.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays, if you go to YouTube, people have literally put like thousands of tribute videos, right, where they put the best of. But I think whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes, any, you know, best highlight reel that you could kind of watch is a great place to start. The one that I love that I've seen is Michael Jordan to the Max. It was actually, so they did an IMAX film of him, and this was this was more towards the end of his career, right? So it was really kind of watching him sort of, you know, in the later years, and he's about to kind of finish his career with the Bulls, and he's reflecting on a lot of the philosophies and life lessons that he learned. And the last line of the movie, he says, "There will be someone greater." And I just thought that was such a graceful,
profound
in a way to leave, because he knows he's the greatest, you know, of all time, arguably, and definitely up until that point. Now, I'm sure when LeBron finishes playing, that will be the conversation of kind of comparing those careers. But in my mind, he's always the GOAT, right? He's the greatest ever. But for him to say, yeah, there will be someone greater.
Yeah.
You know, we're always kind of standing on the shoulders of our ancestors,
yeah,
in a way. And so to me, that spoke of his humility and understanding that the game evolves, life evolves. There will be people who are better coming along. That's the whole point of it, right? Is to learn from, even as actors and performers, we learn from all the people who've contributed and have existed up until now. And we want to kind of continue to evolve the art form, you mm-hmm. know?
No, so absolutely. This has been a really awesome conversation, because I wouldn't initially think, oh, someone can be fanatic about Michael Jordan. But I realized, like, I have such a love for him too. Mm. And through your passion, I'm reigniting my passion.
I know, Claire. I'm like, I want to hear about, I'm going to do an interview with you about
I'm
Michael.
I'm literally going to, when we're done with this podcast, I am literally going to watch some Michael Jordan videos. And then I'm going to text you and tell you, thank you.
Yes.
No, this is awesome.
Yes. Yeah, send me the link, whatever you
want.
I will.
Sure, and then we can talk. Absolutely.
I'll make sure I watch it during the day.
No, so James, you're amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
This was so much fun.
I'm serious. I'm amped now. So
thanks, James. It was a slam dunk.
Yeah, thank you.
Claire, you know a lot about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls.
I was obsessed. I mean, James and I are not that far apart. You know, I think, to me, I love competition. I love sports. And he's one of the most amazing athletes to ever live. And his basketball career, in particular, that Bulls era with Phil Jackson coaching and Scottie Pippen and Steve Kerr and Dennis Rodman, it was just phenomenal. I mean, really, you know, the Lakers had a nice run, especially when Phil came over to coach them, but nothing like what we had going on in Chicago in that Michael Jordan number 23 era. So he's a huge inspiration in my life, you know?
It's a dominance, just total dominance. Would you learn a sport the way James learned a sport for someone in your life that
Heck
you would love
yes.
to hang out with, that you just be like, yeah, I totally will go to your thing with you. And then who would the person be?
Of course, Michael
would
Jordan.
Totally do-
I will learn any sport there is. I grew up playing sports. My dad, I should rephrase that a little bit. I grew up around sports. My dad was the football and track coach. I was encouraged to try everything and do everything. I don't think I ever found my niche in high school and junior high sports. I did cross country. I did the running part of track, you know. But with my kids, I really look to Michael Jordan as sort of an inspiration and a guide with how to raise young athletes. Two of them play club soccer at a very high level. One of them is in a conservatory dance program. All four on the swim team. They all four play, you know, softball, baseball on just a little league recreation level. And I really feel it's so important to develop, you know, the athleticism of your kids or your children, youngsters, the next generation, whatever you want to say, because it's something that can't really be taught later in life. Like, you can't just all of a sudden in junior high or high school decide, like, oh, I think I want to play soccer and then be competitive and then, you know, unless you're Michael Jordan and it's baseball or golf, and then you can do whatever you want. But, you know, the fact is he's a phenomenal athlete who'd been training from a very, very young age intensely. And so with me, I want to open those doors for my kids when they're older, high school, college, after college, professional, possibly. At this age, like, I do take the training pretty seriously, and so do they, you know? And it's about that. It's about finding that balance as a parent from how to inspire and push versus, like, demand. You know what I mean?
You are one pregnancy away from fielding a perfect 5-on-5.
I know.
Well, we had a good time today, guys. It was a beautiful time, even though I am forever a Knicks fan through and through, and maybe I'll have to just put a little bit of a little tiny drawer in my heart, I will say, for Michael Jordan, just for the sheer inspiration that
he's
brought.
But you know what? That's what's so great about this podcast. You went in thinking, not really into, and then you admit it. You, James, got you to love Michael Jordan.
I like Michael
No, I
Jordan.
Think you love.
I
say it, David.
Say it. Appreciate Michael Jordan. I you know acknowledge what? We should, him, and I'm thankful for him.
We should get together and watch the Gatorade game, because if you haven't seen it, that is just like pure magical athleticism, and I want to share that with you.
I like Mike, okay? I like Mike. And we like you, and thanks for liking the podcast. As always, the likes and the subscribes and the follows and all the things. Hearts, taps. Guys, until next Thursday, all the love. I love you.
Go watch some MJ videos. That's what I'm going to do. And before we go, next week we have dropping into Fanatics, the fantastic and extremely creative director, Mike Mendez, personal friend of mine. Love him. You guys know he's directed me in Grave Dancers and also Big Ass Spider and also Tales of Halloween. And he's done the recent Toys of Terror, which we talk about in the episode. Of course, if you know Mike, you know we're talking about mini action figures and toys and figurines and everything that is covering the entire wall, ceiling, floor, and every other surface available in his apartment. So make sure you drop in next week to talk about toys and figurines with the amazing director, Mike Mendez. We'll see you guys then. Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at wearefanatics.
Yes, that's We Are, F-A-N-A-D-D-I-C-T-S. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Colin Baker. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Play That's a Lot.
I might be a fan of Michael Jordan. What happened to me?
Number 23. Number 23. Number 23.
Oh, I might be a fan of Michael fucking Jordan. Oh, what happened to me?
Also 45.
What happened to me?
Also 45.
What happened to me?
Also 45.
Do we remember that he was a Washington Wizard?
Kind of.
What happened to him? What happened to him? What happened to him?
He missed the sorting hat.
He did miss the sorting hat.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.